Today is August 5th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. To get the full story on anything we cover in this show, you can visit the show notes at macobserver.com/roundup. In the spotlight this week, all kinds of different things. It was a weird week. There's a lot going on. Too much. Actually, not that much of real interest. Apple Computer, though, issued a warning on Thursday that it may have to restate financial statements to account for past stock option grants. At issue are some backdated stock option grants that were issued between 97 and 2001. In the company's statement on the subject, it announced that financial statements and all earnings and press releases and similar communications issued by the company relating to periods commencing on September 29th, 2002 should not be relied upon. In other words, every financial statement for the last 4 years. The investigation is still underway, so Apple is delaying the filing of its financials for the quarter that ended at the beginning of last July. For those keeping score, Apple's stock closed Thursday at $69.59 a share. That's Thursday night. Then in the wake of this announcement, which happened on Thursday evening, the stock spent most of Friday down about $4 before jumping up again at the end of the day to end the week up at $68.30 a share. In the long run, this doesn't seem to be likely to be an issue for Apple's stock price, though. The two analysts, Sha Wu of American Technology Research and Gene Munster of Piper Jaffray, issued reports to that effect. We'll take a closer look at all this in just a moment. Let's take a quick look at some other news from the week. Avid announced on Wednesday that it has purchased Sibelius. Avid is well known for its Pro Tools recording software, sold under its DigiDesign brand, and M-Audio devices for musicians and recording engineers. Under its Avid brand, it also sells high-end digital video editing equipment, both hardware and software. Sibelius produces professional and consumer-level music notation and educational applications. Avid purchased Sibelius for about $23 million U.S. in cash. Sibelius will henceforth operate as a part of Avid's DigiDesign branch. Sibelius is not the first company Avid has acquired. DigiDesign has been an Avid company since 1995, when M-Audio became a part of Avid, M-Audio later became a part of Avid in August of 2004, and in March of 2005, it purchased the video editing company Pinnacle Systems. And since I feel like I run the risk of sounding like a bigot, I hate to ring the death knell for iTunes competition, but the online music subscription service Napster is suffering from a declining subscription base and isn't ruling out the possibility of selling the company off. CEO Chris Gorog said in an earnings conference call that the company doesn't have its head in the sand in relation to the possibility of a merger or acquisition. In an effort to boost subscriptions, the company started a free streaming music service. It is still maintaining its subscription-based service as well. Mr. Gorog says the new free site should help to bring in new paid subscribers. Napster reported a net loss of $9.8 million U.S. for the first quarter. For the same quarter last year, it reported a $19.9 million loss. And in other music news, Verizon Wireless is eliminating the $15 a month fee that it charges subscribers for its VCast music download service for mobile phones. The company will continue to charge $2 a song. The price restructuring comes as Verizon rolls out its new cell phone and MP3 player, dubbed Chocolate. And last on iPod-killing watch, Microsoft may roll out its Zune media player and music download service on November 14th. We'll keep an eye out. And lastly in the news, before I head into the context machine to see what we can see, some quick comments relating to last week's look at iTunes dominance. Audible renewed its exclusive audiobook distribution contract with iTunes, extending its old 2007 expiration out to 2010. As iTunes passes the 200 million songs sold mark in Europe, Coke is beginning a multi-million iTunes song giveaway throughout the continent just a few months after shuttering its own My Coke Music store. And Ford, GM, and Mazda are all greatly expanding their built-in iPod solutions for their cars, such that more than two-thirds of cars sold in the U.S. will be iPod-ready. I think that's called solidifying a market position. Well, actually, I can think of other things to call it, but they're really vulgar, so I'm not going to say them on the show. Well, what I can't think to do is bring Jeff Gamet on the show here for the Context Machine to talk about what all of this stuff is. And by the way, we were just talking before the show started about how weird a news week this is, Jeff. It's like there were tons of news stories, but they're all spread out all over the place. And individually, every one of these news stories was kind of not a big deal, but I feel like a lot happened this week.
A lot did happen this week. And yes, I would agree. It was kind of a weird nutso news week. Yes.
Something weird. Anyway, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So let's start just because it was the thing I put first in the show. And again, it was really hard to make editorial decisions about what to bring up on this show and what to set aside and in what order to do stuff. So let's just go with the thing I mentioned first before. Apple delayed filing its financial statements from this past quarter. And it said it can't rely on, or that we can't rely as shareholders or consumers of information about the company, can't rely on its financial statements from the last 4 years. So the last time we talked about this, discussed it very briefly, and we more or less agreed this was a small deal. This is a pretty small blip on the radar. When a company comes out and says, oh, and by the way, you can't trust anything that we put in the last 4 years of earnings statements, that sounds really serious. It sounds like a really big deal. What's going on here? Is this a bigger deal than we expected it to be?
Well, to put it in perspective, if you were on an airplane and it was going to crash into the ocean and the flight attendant said, go ahead and hold on to that cushion so that you don't sink, but don't trust it. It might fill up with water and pull you down. Okay, that would be really bad. This is going to be very stressful for some people that have a lot of money tied up in Apple. And in the grand scheme of things, I think it's not going to be as big a deal as a lot of people are making out right now. Even though Apple's stock is dropping quickly right now, it will recover, everything will be fine, especially since it looks like Steve Jobs is not in a position where he could be charged criminally for anything. With Steve still at the helm, everyone can be happy. The ship will not teeter completely over, it will right itself, and we will continue on.
Now, it's also worth pointing out, I actually had some sentence in the show that said something about stock price dropping today, and I went and checked it right at the closing, and it actually rebounded almost all the way, regained almost all of its losses over the previous 24 hours, and it's now closing at about 68, only down about a dollar from its close on Thursday evening. So it does seem to be, and it's hard to say if that's a WWDC thing or the interest rate stuff that people were talking about today, which, incidentally, Wall Street does not expect the Fed to raise interest rates in the next meeting, which buoyed the whole stock market. So there's a lot going on, and it's hard to necessarily read exactly what people are thinking right now, particularly with WWDC around the corner. But is there any reason? I mean, is this just an issue with the company saying, you know what? We know that something happened in the last 4 years, so we might need to adjust something from our September 2002 statement, and that will have some reverberation through all of the subsequent statements. But there's really only one little thing that's way back there that we're going to have to fix. Could it be something that small, or does it mean that there's something truly wrong in every quarter from the last, you know, 4 years?
Well, it really could go either way. My gut feeling, because my crystal ball, although I got it back, apparently I didn't get batteries with it, so it still doesn't work.
It's unfortunate. We were going to use that later in the show.
Oh, you know, maybe I'll have to look and see if I can find some. I'll check. But until then, okay, what I think ultimately is going to come out of this is Apple's going to say, we found a small handful of things. that need to be corrected. And because those things need to be corrected, it will cascade through the rest of the financial reports. So it's probably going to be stuff from farther back, and they'll take care of it. Everyone involved is going to walk away with a few scrapes and bruises. It'll all heal, and everything will be right with the world again.
All right, now let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about Avid and Sibelius. Avid just bought Sibelius. Now, this means that Avid controls one of the top digital audio apps, that's Pro Tools, and one of the top digital notation and scoring apps, that would be Sibelius Software. How do you see this acquisition fitting into to Avid's trajectory as a firm? Why did they make the decision to purchase Sibelius?
For Avid, I think it makes sense because they didn't have this type of a product before, at least not something on the caliber of Sibelius. And realistically, although I'm sure there's people that will disagree with me and say Finale's a better product, I think Sibelius is by far the best music notation application on the market. So why not, if you can afford to buy it and bring it into your product lineup, why wouldn't you do that? Now, having said that and making it sound like, hey, I'm cool with all this, I freaked out when I saw the press release. My first thought was, oh my God, what's going to happen to Sibelius? And I was really worried for a few minutes. But because it's worldwide developer pre-week freakout time, I was able to focus on some other crazy things and calm down about this, and then I could think about it some more, and I went, okay, this probably isn't as bad as I was thinking. Because Avid, although at one point they did kind of shun the Macintosh, they're not doing that anymore. And we have DigiDesign and M-Audio and the video, I forgot the video company. Anyhow, so they have all of these different companies that they've purchased that are still being able to do their own thing and are producing good quality products and offering good Mac support too. So once I thought about it that way, I went, okay, this will be fine. And I think what we're going to see now is that Avid will work to increase the interoperability between things like Pro Tools and Sibelius. So we'll be able to get what could potentially be a powerhouse audio editing and notation suite.
Now, this was really interesting to me. If you look at the space of audio editing, and it's particularly interesting to me that it's being folded in to DigiDesign rather than, say, M-Audio. If you look at the space here, Apple is out there with Logic Pro, which has some notation scoring stuff that is not on a par with Sibelius, but it does provide some functionality for that. And then there's Digital Performer, which is one of the other big scoring applications on the Mac. Originally, it was a scoring application, and then they built in some MIDI and recording functionality. And now, when you talk to Mac recording people, they tend to say, well, you know, Digital Performer, Pro Tools, Logic Pro, they all have kind of their different camps of people that work with them. The hip-hop producers tend to use Logic, and the old analog producers tend to use Pro Tools, and people that did a lot of scoring, and particularly classical music people tend to use Digital Performer. It's kind of, that's the layout of that space, as I understand it. How will this change the relationship between those three products for the Mac?
I think if Apple wants to compete with Pro Tools in that arena, they're really going to have to step it up a few notches with their music notation.
Now, we're talking about the competition between Logic Pro with its sort of moderate level of scoring and Sibelius, which is truly the sort of, as I have seen it, the gold standard. I know Finale is out there, but I don't know much about it.
Right, and thank you for filling in the rest of the words that were in my head but never came out of my mouth.
All right. Let's scoot down a little bit and talk about iTunes competitors. We talked about iTunes on top last week.
Wait. You said there's iTunes competitors?
Well, there were. Is Napster going under?
Yes, I really think Napster's going down hard.
Oh, so your crystal ball is working. That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I just batteries in.
I just like knocked it.
It's 9 volt. Yeah, Yeah.
So they're gone.
I think someone's going to, what's the politically correct way to say it? Absorb them?
Yeah, well, I was looking for various things to say, and all I could come up with was vulgar stuff earlier on. Let me ask you this question. Who would buy Napster at this point?
I have a really hard time coming up with a good answer to that one. But someone out there is looking at it going, you know, we could buy that for cheap and make money.
Now, the most extraordinary thing to me, I mean, Napster is the name. When people do brand recognition studies, Napster routinely comes in ahead of iTunes simply because the word is part of popular culture after the whole file sharing thing erupted in the late 90s. So the only motivation I can see for anyone buying it is to buy the name Napster. Just let's suck some oxygen for a second and ask this realistic question. Among the major players out there currently, whether they're Microsoft, Real, MTV, Walmart, who among those running music download services out there, would any of them have any interest in the Napster name?
Sure. I would have thought that Microsoft would have an interest in it before all the news about Zuma came out. Or, excuse me, Zuma. That's a scooter. Zoom. That's a music player.
I was wondering if I'd been saying that wrong all this time.
No, it's just me. Apparently I was dropped on my head. Sorry about that. So before the Zune information came out, I would have thought Microsoft would be a contender for Napster because it's pocket change for them. And then they'd have the name. And you see the Napster icon on so many Microsoft-related music products anyhow. It would be an easy tie-in. With the whole Zune thing, Microsoft is creating their whole system from the ground up now. I don't see Napster as something that they're going to be that interested in. But one of the other players that doesn't have really good name recognition for their services, Walmart, that's a perfect example. That would be a good fit for a company like that. They could afford to take the loss just to buy the name and the logo.
Now, I forgot what I was going to say.
It's because I was dropped on my head. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's contagious, apparently. Well, let's move on and talk about one of the other competitors. It's kind of a tangential competitor, but this was a really interesting story to me. Verizon is dropping its monthly fee for buying songs over its VCast service, meaning you can pick up your cell phone, you can hit a few buttons, and you can buy a song. Previously, in order to do that, you had to pay the cost of the song, $2, plus the monthly cost of the service. Now, the monthly cost is gone. It's $2 for a song, and you can buy it on the road. That really made my ears perk up. How did you react to this story?
My first thought was, well, that was smart. Why would you make people pay $15 for the privilege of paying $2 for a song? You know, that one just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Yes. So get that out of the way. Okay. Now you have a service that can be at least generally in the ballpark price-wise. So it can now be a contender for a reliable music download service. At $2 a pop for a song, oh, I don't like that. But that's not the point because I don't have a Verizon phone. For other people, this is probably going to be a very compelling thing. They can be driving down the highway, listening to the radio. They hear a song they really like, whip out their Verizon phone, and as they're going across two or three lanes, pop in a few keystrokes and own the song, or at least own enough of it that they can play it for a while.
Now, the thing that's really interesting to me about this, I mean, the digital downloads of singles is entirely about impulse buy. And I think Steve Jobs even used that word when he originally released the iTunes Music Store. He said, you know, 99 cents, that's priced right for an impulse buy. The thing is, $1.99, when you're on the road with a cell phone, if you say, man, I really want to hear that song, and you happen to have a pair of headphones and you have your phone, if it's in your head that you can do that, you can just say, oh, I can hear this song right now, and then I'll own it. Sure, I'll pay $2 for that. I wouldn't do that, but I can imagine a lot of people doing that, particularly, I mean, people who pay $2, $3, $4 in the past for ringtones. I mean, what the hell did people pay for ringtones? I don't even know. But I have my understanding is that people can't get enough of paying money for 30-second clips of songs. If people are willing to pay that for ringtones, it seems like they should certainly be willing to pay $2 for a song.
I think so. And when you're doing it from your phone, it's not even like it's real money. You're just pushing buttons on a phone.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You don't even need to enter a password.
Right.
Like you do on iTunes.
Right. I can see that going awry somewhere at some party. You get a hold of your friend's phone and buy like 50 songs for him. Go over well.
Hey, man, I got you a present that you paid for.
By the way, I got to leave now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. All right. Well, anything else? I mean, this was a weird week. Any other news stories from the week that caught your eye that you want to talk about a little bit?
Well, let's see. I'm just actually hopping over to the Mac Observer site right now to see what all we ran today, to see if there was something else that we should be discussing right now.
Now, by the way, it's really hard to talk about this stuff. It's the week before. Jeff and I were talking about this before the show. The week before a keynote is a very difficult time to come up with stories because everyone's writing essentially about what happens the next week. And all kinds of different people pop up to talk about what's going to happen next week. So it's a very bizarre experience. The stuff that comes up before a keynote is always kind of bizarre.
Yes. Oh, here's one that we haven't discussed yet, which is Apple's response to Norway's iTunes complaint.
Why don't you give us the quick and dirty on what happened there and let everybody know about that.
All right, here's the quick rundown. Norway has sent Apple a letter saying that the terms and conditions of the iTunes Music Store violate Scandinavian laws and that Apple's trying to impose English law on the region with all the licensing, and that the digital rights management protection that's built into Apple's songs that you purchase from the iTunes Music Store is also in violation of some Consumer Rights Act. And I'm sure someone's going to send me an email and say, it's not a Consumer Rights Act, it's this thing instead. So I'll just wait for the email.
Well, and by the way, just in terms of some context here, it reminds me of what happened in France with the iPod, with the iTunes DRM, open up your formats law. This is kind of like the French law light.
Yes, that's a really good description. Yes.
And for anyone who wants to learn more about that, we talked about that on a previous show sometime in June.
Perfect. Now they can go find it. Go do your homework, everyone. Okay, so what ended up happening was Norway said, Apple, you have to change some things if you want to be able to sell music without having us take you to court and sue you and all the fun stuff that goes along with that. So then Denmark and Sweden said, hey, we have similar laws, us too. So they've been waiting to see what Apple's response to Norway is. And Apple responded and said, you know what? We're doing everything the way we're supposed to, and we're not going to change things. Most politely, please go pack sand. And Norway is not happy with that response, and they will most likely start some type of litigation against Apple, and then Sweden will follow suit, and then Denmark shortly afterwards.
So we'll be watching this for a while. This is going to take some time to pan out and move its way through the courts.
Yes, it'll turn into a long drawn out thing. And so what everyone can do to see what's going to happen is go back and listen to the Weekly Roundup podcast where we were discussing what would happen if France enacted their law, which they did, but it's not the same law, so it doesn't matter now. But ultimately this could end up being the same thing where Apple says, all right, if you want to play that way, you don't get the iTunes Music Store, and they pull out of the countries.
All right.
I think that won't happen. The Scandinavian countries will come up with some way to justify leaving everything the way it is and make it sound like that Apple did what they wanted them to.
Right on.
Right on.
All right, that's going to have to do it for this week. Jeff, thanks for coming on the show.
Sure thing.
And everybody, we will be back next week. We're doing WWDC next week. It's going to be a big week, lots of stuff. You never know what's going to happen at WWDC, except that a lot of people are going to lose their minds.
Yes, they are.
And we'll be here to talk about it. And what would a weekly roundup be without a little bit of product news? Here's the product roundup. QuickerTech announced the immediate availability of its new 17-inch MacBook Pro handle on Monday. The intelligently named MacBook Pro handle is available at the QuickerTech website and is priced at $50 US. A version for the 15-inch MacBook Pro is also available for $48. Trans Gaming Inc. on Thursday introduced Cider, a technology that promises to convert Windows games to Mac OS X on Intel processors without the need for the long porting process traditionally required to bring titles to the platform. This is actually a really interesting area. I'll look into this a little bit more, and we'll talk about it on a future show. Autodesk on Monday introduced Maya 8, the latest version of its 3D modeling, animation, and rendering software. Improvements in this upgrade include scalable multi-threading for better performance on multiprocessor computers, support for high dynamic range and floating point images, and geometry caching. Maya 8 is available in a 64-bit version, but only on Windows and Linux, so Mac users will need to run the 32-bit version. Pricing is $2,000 for Maya Complete and $7,000 for Maya Unlimited. Upgrade pricing is also available, and you may want to check the system requirements before you go out and buy this one. Newer Technology on Thursday announced that all of its new Power Mac laptop and iPod batteries will now come with a return shipping label for sending in old batteries for free recycling. The program is only available in the 48 continental United States. Podbricks is now selling a Lego playset based on Apple's famous 1984 Macintosh commercial that aired during the 1984 Super Bowl. The playset, which has a 100-unit run, sells for $199. Right. Webitech announced the immediate availability of a new 4-port version of its TuffTech hard drive enclosure on Wednesday. The case is priced at $120. You can also buy it with a drive pre-installed. And finally, in this week's Slacker's Guide, Chris Berlich takes a look at Battlefront.com's drop team. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Roundup. Our content is written by the good people of the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. Remember that the Podcast and Portable Media Expo is coming up at the end of September. Go check out the link for that in the show notes. That's all I got this week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay subscribed. Until next week, I'll see you online. It's like everyone kind of rises up out of the sea. That's a different crowd of crazy people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we should put this whole discussion at the end of the show.
You're totally welcome to.
I'm of course the one that called them all crazy people, so I'm gonna be the one that everyone hates.
Yeah. Oh, and just in case you actually do put this at the end of the show, I don't think any of those people are crazy.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
You didn't seem so quick to disagree when I said it the first time.
You know, I really tried. I tried so hard to disagree, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
You just, for my sake, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes, I'm certain that's what it was.
All right. Well, in that case, it's time to start. Let's get on the way.
Here we go.